Professor Dan Dorling, who is going to talk to us about global trends over time, apart from climate, is everything else about to get better, which is a great title. Danny is the Halford McKinder Professor of Geography at the University of Oxford, and prior to that he worked at the Universities of Sheffield and Leeds, and then prior to that Newcastle, Bristol and New Zealand. Danny and I have kind of come across each other in various guises over the last decade or two. And he's a really good example, as I mentioned earlier on, of someone who has a wide range of interests, whose interests aren't just confined to a single discipline. And I think particularly important for this talk is a really good example of someone who's interested in how to communicate research well. He's recently published a couple of books that I'll flag. So most recently, Sally Tomlinson, Rule Britannia, Brexit and the End of Empire. And then prior to that, Peak Inequality, which was a very wide-ranging account of health, housing, employment, education, etc. across the UK. So I'll hand over to Danny, who's going to talk for 44 minutes, I'm told, leaving lots of room for questions.
Thanks very much. It's Friday, it's the end of a long day. I do know what it feels like to be sitting there. And I'm also going to show you how not to present a seat. Because of the way I did a PhD like you, and then one kind of description of academia is you end up just doing a PhD again and again and again and again. So this is my latest PhD, and it's looking at trends over time, and I've got far too many slides, so I'm going to skip over some of them. I can tell you where they are on the web if you're interested. There's always one or two people who are interested, just one or two. You've been told that everything's going faster, unless you're very, very aware. You probably think things are going faster. It's all accelerating. We've got artificial intelligence coming. Universities are producing huge numbers of inventions. The only problem with that story is that when you actually collect some numbers, it's not true. And that's a bit interesting. And then it's interesting, what might that mean? 42 minutes left. It's just the answers of life to universal everything, isn't it? Looking at the old man in the front.
Yeah.
This book came out a few weeks ago called Empty Planet. And it's all about the United Nations population estimates of what's happening. Because it looks like population growth in the world is slowing down faster than we thought it was already. You know, in your PhDs, you have to put a literature review in the start and kind of pay homage to people who've written wonderful things. And then you have to do methodology and make out that you're being careful of what you're doing. You still have to do that when you get old. So I've put a quote from Charles Darwin in here. The interesting thing about Charles Darwin, but one thing is that he wrote about what happens to a species when there are a few favourable seasons and its population numbers explode. He was actually writing about elephants, but the irony was that at the time he was writing, the thing he was talking about was about happening to human beings. That single graph gives you what I think is the most useful summary of global population trends since 1820. It's just the rate of growth each year. And I'm going to assume most of you haven't seen it, or are not that interested in human population growth. But in general, for most of human history, it was really, really low. And there were times when the species could have died out. And then occasionally after particular events, after a plague, after a war, you get a sudden increase. Around about 1820, 1830, it was around about 0.5% a year and falling. And it was falling because of what we, and a few other Europeans, but mainly us, were doing in Africa. Which is, if you go in and colonise a continent, and if you take slaves, for every slave you take, it isn't just all the ones who die on the boat, it's all the people who die before you even get to the boat, and so on. that little dip that started of this graph. There's a word for it, if you go back further, 1492 was a massive drop in human population. It wasn't first at least, it was those Portuguese and Spanish coming over, it was the Germans, taking the Germans to the world. Anyway, that line goes up and up. So you see it's rising. Global population growth, by the time I was born, was about 2% a year. 2% is completely unsustainable. 2% growth a year, you end up in short order with a planet completely and utterly full of people. And so in 1968, people wrote books with titles such as The Population Bomb, saying it's all over, we need famine, we need sterilisation to stop people having babies. The books didn't have much effect. It's interesting to try to work out what did happen, but I haven't got time to speculate on that. But the key thing is that the line is starting to come down. And you're just seeing the beginning of the line coming down. Within the lifetime of the youngest person here, that line is almost certainly going to hit zero. Zero population growth. For the first time in the history of human beings, ever. And that's quite exciting, or it should be. And it isn't some discovery I've made that's generally accepted. The only question is when. And the United Nations currently reckon about 2110, 2120. Those people producing emissions now think it could be 2050. Here are rates of population growth by continent. And if you've got good eyesight, you'll see there's just one aberrant continent. That one aberrant continent is Africa. If Africa were to see fertility decline into faster than that, then we hit stability earlier. And so the interesting question is, why was Africa different? This paper came out in February, and there were others, and it's fascinating. And the people who produced this paper weren't looking for this conclusion or that interested in it, but it appears to be the case, getting stronger and stronger evidence, that the intervention of the IMF and the World Bank and structural adjustment in Africa in the 1980s and 1990s so damaged the education of girls in particular that they had more babies when they became young women. So it's us. So if anybody, well, we're not entirely IMF and World Bank, the Americans are large there. But if anybody ever says to you they're having too many children in Africa, you need to tell them why. And they're not, because you can easily cuddle with 11 billion people, or 10 or 9. Who's doing a... How many of you do human geography, and how many of you do sociology? Who are you talking to? Human geographers? Sociology? Have we got people who are proper scientists?
Yeah. Psychology.
Psychology, okay. We've got lots of graphs coming. This is a changing world population. Which, if you don't know about change, it can bore you to know about it. But basically, all spiky in the past, and then the predictions go all smooth. That's what I did 6 years ago. I got a pen and drew a wiggly line on it. Right. And that's as good as it gets, seriously. And the great thing about being a professor at Oxford is I can now say that. Because Drew would be lying on it and said, the change population looks more like that. Why might it be a wiggly line? Because you've got baby booms. You've got worldwide baby booms going on. Not just the baby boom that occurred after the Second World War, but the baby boom that occurred in the revolution in China in 1949, and the baby boom that occurred when partition in India caused utter chaos, again, thanks to the British. You can make the wiggly line a bit more impressive, but it's exactly the same idea. And if it happens like that, we're looking at 7.4 billion people, not the current prediction of 11.2 billion. By 81 years from now, it's staggering how much we don't know. I think it's really funny that people in universities produce reports about, you know, really kind of considered reports about things, but we don't actually have a clue how many of us they're going to be in 81 years from now. But we're getting tighter. I should have shown this graph earlier. The smooth line is just how many people. going from 1 billion around about 1820 to an estimated 10 billion when the UN released their estimates a few years ago, now say 11.2. The question mark is pointing to the tiny little bump. The main reason world population is going to get to possibly 9, 10, 11 is aging. It's people living longer, it's not more babies. Skip that. So weird graphs, these are called phase diagrams. And the rest of what you're going to see are phase diagrams. So I'll give you an example. Here's a country, starts off with 100 million people, grows by 2% a year. So you can see its population goes up to 400 million, got good eyesight by 2020. Okay? And along the x-axis are the extra people that are appearing up here, just goes up and up. That's what 2% a year gives you. And that's what it looks like on these graphs. Here's a country which was going up by 2% a year, but the next year it's up by 1.9, 1.8, 1.7. By 1970, it's up going up to zero, so it's not rising at all. Then minus 0.1 and so on. And if any of you've seen the film Children of Men or read the book, that's the kind of Children of Men scenario. So I'm just trying to show you what things look like. Here's my favourite one. This is stability, or a particular form of stability. Population moving towards 99 million, hardly at all changing in the country. Now that spiral, if you draw a normal graph, looks like that, just part of it. And you can produce a Daily Mail story of that spiral. You can talk about, look at all the immigrants coming in, it's terrible. And then look at people leaving, or they're not having enough babies, you've got to incentivize people to have babies, and then so on. It's just a spiral. First field data, this is babies in the world. So babies going up and up and up as it goes up. But when the graph goes towards me, it means the rise in babies is accelerating. This is literally how many babies each year. So that by about 1990, we're looking at, depending on how good your eyesight is, 135 million babies born a year. 1990 is what Hannes Rosling called peak baby. So those babies born in 1990 will now be 29 years old. Part of the reason why there are lots of people in those going over the Mediterranean, well, the main reason is that we're just nasty and we're far less than Donald Trump. Far more people die on our European border than on the Mexican border. But because so many people were born in 1990 and around it, I just scribbled the line on. I'm going to show you a few other things. I'm going to go through really, really quickly. So what I'm trying to do is get data that's high quality and look at the change to see what's accelerating. And I've got about four things that are accelerating. The first graph here is student debt in the United States. It's still going up. Because it's leaning that way, it's decelerating. So there's a kind of end in sight. I'll skip the other one. The titles there, it was very badly presented. The titles are on the side because this is work only just being done. It should have a title a little bit above it, I have to tell you. This is mortgages in the States. And that's the credit crunch. We don't know where that's going to go. The one nearer me is total US debt. Again, we don't know where it's going to go. Here's a simpler one. This is Wikipedia. Number of entries in Wikipedia. Now, of course, it initially accelerates, going up past 1 million and 2 million entries, but then in 2007, it begins to decelerate, because there's a limit to how many things. Actually, there's a limit to how many self-serving academics can put up their own Bible through Wikipedia. Oh, that's their mate, he says, having done it himself. I think he's got people on Wikipedia who pretend it isn't me. And if you get very nervy about these things, you can get excited. You know what happened in 2015? They created stubs in Wikipedia, where they encourage people to put another definition. But there's a limit. I'm looking at lots of other data about data, because there's actually a limit to the growth of data. There's only so many movies you might want to see. The graph nearer me is publications. It's really bad news if you publish books. It's data that comes from the beginning of the printing press all the way to now. And the lovely thing about relating to the number of books produced per year is you can actually see when they burn books. Because when they took a great big pile of books and burned them outside a cathedral somewhere in the Netherlands, publishers decided they didn't want to publish a new book for a few years. But that great big question mark kind of thing is the beginning of the decline of the number of books published per year. In this case, in the Netherlands, we can look in every country. What happened? By about the 1980s, we were kind of peak middle class potential, I'll put it like that, over you had to have books. You actually bought more books than you could possibly read. Literacy was almost 100% in the Netherlands, and there wasn't the internet. And also, I think it's quite important to have books on your shelves so that if people came to visit, they could see your books. Then that declines. There are other things to do. You don't need to read so many books, and it goes down. What I have to do is look at these graphs for about another, I think it's 20 or 30 countries, just to check it isn't the Netherlands. But it's just an example of things not always keeping up. Emissions. Okay? A gigaton, we're going to be showing you gigatons, is equivalent to 100 million wattage African elephants. Big thing. It's a matter of carbon, really. Emissions are going up. So here's one example of something that is still going up and accelerating. This is showing the early data from 1750, this is showing it from 1921, and this is showing it from 1960. And if you like, I may sound a bit. When I was young, I was worried we were all going to die in a nuclear war, and the probability was quite high. The current fear is we're all going to die because of this. Well, if we don't die, we're going to have pretty awful, miserable lives. If you want to buy one book, by the way, Greta Thunberg's book was published last week. It's £2.99. Best book I've seen in about 3 years. So it's quite devastating. And the latest figure, 2018, we're looking at producing over 35 billion tonnes a year and accelerating. So when it's moving away from the axis, it's accelerating. That's why things are not very good news at the moment. The other really depressing thing about that graph is that whenever we have an agreement like Kyoto or Paris, it's as if policy makers take their foot off the pedal afterwards and think they've done loads. And you get an acceleration of emissions after those agreements. Kirsten, who helped all these graphs, is sitting in the back, and she didn't want me to show you this one because we're trying to experiment with what you do with these graphs for an audience. We know that you don't show this many. In future, I'm probably going to show 10. quite interested in what 10 show. Same graph, just stretched out. This is what it looks like normally. So what I'm doing is looking at the really subtle changes, trying to find clues in things. This is where the data was produced on. And the question is, will it decline? The only good news on emissions of CO2 is that the doubling time was reduced from 21 years to 22, which is pathetic at first. But the great thing is, it's really the only thing you have to worry about, I would say, in a very open way. I'm not that worried about soil or water. Most of the species extinction has actually happened. If you look at the species extinction data, you'll find out we killed off all the easy ones. The really bare animals on the islands have gone. The major species extinction, I'm not allowed to say it, so the time that I've said it is, if you look at the data, the major of the species extinction is slowing down, at least the things with backbones, because there aren't many left. Temperature. Three different temperature records. One is the NASA record, one is the Met Office record, and the squiggly one near to me is the record done by satellites, since we put them up around 1979. I'm going to make a change on this. The squiggly satellite one was data sent to me by my very good friend, who's a past president of the Society of Cartographers, who's convinced that climate change isn't happening. And he sent me that data. And I have to admit, I first of all graphed it and went, wait, that's very different. But the problem is that satellite data is very poor compared to thermometers. So what I'm going to do is show you a last tricky one. But I'm just going to put it on a normal graph. And so on a normal graph, that's what the satellite data, which somebody who doesn't think it well is warming up, sends you. And it's warming up. This is the point when you know that climate change is for real. Now the reason it's squiggly is because, you know, something supposedly amazing happened in 1998, which probably didn't. Probably an error of the satellite, because the thermometer isn't good enough. So the method I'm showing you only works with really good data, and the world is heating up. So the climate change deniers have gone absolutely silent for the last 10 years, and they've actually switched their attention to species, which is very annoying for the people who are worried about extinction of species. People, and some quick graphs about rising people again. This little lad is on Lesbos in the Aegean. His family made a 3-mile trip across. And the Superman cape he's wearing was made by a PhD student at the University of Sheffield. I wasn't there. World population. This is going up to about 10 or 11 million. This is the current United Nations estimates, produced somewhat under 2 years ago. At some point this year, the United Nations will produce their new estimates. They'll almost certainly be lower. There'll be lots of new stories about how this is a big news event. But even with those current estimates, you can see how it's heading towards that stability. The only way we're not going to get human population not rising is massive world war, which is entirely possible, unknown pandemics, which is entirely possible. I won't go through the others. They're all basically massive depressing events. Oh, Trump wins. You know, Trump wins second presidency, not even wins, but there were more Trumps in Brazil than anywhere else, and we can send them to chaos. Chaos gives you babies. Stability, women having power, respect, the average woman in the world was half a baby less than the average man. All you need is for the average woman to actually have the power to enact that choice and value one to 8 billion or less. This is the same data on a log graph. So you can see the event of 1492, you can see the colonisation of Africa, the effect that had. And then you can see our current little thing, which is nice. This is the first time human population has slowed down, not due to some really awful set of events. And you can draw all of these different countries. So here we've got the United States. The United States is actually a bit out of control, as I'll show you later. Of all the rich countries in the world, it's the only one where until recently people are having more than 2 babies per couple. Next to it, the one which is squiggling around and going down is China. And they've relaxed the two-child policy. Turns out people have got used to having one child. Here we've got Africa as a whole, going up to 4 billion on the current UN estimate. The latest data for Africa shows an absolute dramatic slowdown in fertility in the last 5 or 6 years, and that's all it takes for you not to get to 4 billion. Next to this is Britain. You know, fairly insignificant country, apart from affected animal cases like Africa. That sweep in 1848 is why Newfoundland Island really matters. It's the British Isles. And if you want to get all Nigel Farage, the 2008, that's the AA migration. Three times we've gone out and invited people to come to this country. We did it around about 1905, so they came from refugees and then Aliens Act. Enoch Powell went out to the Caribbean and India, begging people to come and be nurses and bus drivers. A few years later, he took some blood. And the latest one, just to show how nasty we are, 2003, Tony Blair opens up to AA early. That's called an invitation. We chose to make it. And 5 years after people turn up, we say how terrible it is they're turning up. A couple more countries, if you can read sideways, you don't know which they are. My eyesight is going on, I should know. Indian subcontinent, with Pakistan and Bangladesh stuck in, dramatic slowdown in population. You don't need a one-child policy to get something like that. I'm going to skip through these because these, you probably have enough of them. Let's get through. This is fertility. Let's go back. Oh. I've got too many graphs, haven't I? Let's go show you these two. This is fertility for two countries with the highest fertility on their continent. So you're looking at fertility in Niger, which rises when you have wars and insurrections, and then has absolutely fallen. Not as smoothly as that, it's just the data isn't any better than that. And East Timor. So if you want to have a look at what happens when you have an invasion from another country, you get rises. But again, it's coming down really, really fast. The birds are locally specific, I should point out. This is Guatemala and Haiti. Just trying to give you a sense of what's happening. And supposing we were sitting here in 1990, or you wouldn't have a date in 1990, 2000, you'd be shocked. Everywhere around the world, women are having fewer babies, without exception, and faster each year than the United Nations falls in the US. And still, the Green Party worries about people when they've really got to grow up and learn and stop it. Here we've got France, and we've got the UK. This is showing where we're currently in. Lots of mentions of abortion on these particular slides because it was fairly important, not initially when it became legal, but later on. And it'll matter in the US. Now, if you've only got one clinic left in the whole state in the US, you are in real trouble. And here's some of the most dramatic ones in the world. So you're looking at South Korea, you're looking at Portugal, you're looking at the whole of Brazil. Real data. This is 2010 in Brazil. This has happened. This isn't projections. It's the biggest slowdown. So, as I say, maybe almost everything else you can measure is slowing down. It's partly slowing down because there are less people. But it's quite incredible. And because it's a kind of goodness story, we don't look at it. Because what social scientists do is we kind of like little sharks. We desperately try and find where's the really next really bad thing. And then they spend our time writing lots of papers about austerity. All falling life expectancy in Britain, or 90% of what I do. This is interesting. We've got to have some tables with far too many numbers. But just look at the red numbers. This is Africa, the last 3 years since we have data. 4.7 babies, 4.6, 4.5. Quite incredible drops as far as we know. Babies have never been at the causes as well as they are currently recorded in Africa, thanks to Bill and Melinda. Bill and Melinda have a lot of money. They don't spend it all very wisely because individuals don't. But they wanted babies vaccinated. And the great thing about that is you've got to find a baby first. Because they want data on the babies being vaccinated. We initially got a rise in babies, which wasn't a real rise, it's people finding them. Because many babies don't go first, but anyway. And it is things like sounds trite, but honestly, I'm giving you the very short and fast version rather than the more academic version, but you might as well take the stuff that actually matters. Bill Gates are making far too much money from a truly awful operating system that's actually held ironically. But the story of humankind is quite incredible sometimes. And these are the changes. And so the -0.06 is dramatic. Year on year falls currently. Enough of population, but it really matters. GDP, world GDP, really useless kind of measure, but it matters to a lot of people. And again, I'm an optimist. Look at the recent, okay, forget the 2008 world crash, that's kind of there, they happen in this world. It's the slow. And Paul, who knows if you don't know, because Neil Wiggy used to do this. As soon as the person at the lecture theatre begins to gesticulate and say, look at that, it's doing this, you've got to be wary, you've got to think, is it? But I think the rises of GDP really are slowing. They're certainly slowing in China, and we now know we're getting good. Well, Bloomberg now said the data in China is good. So the skeptics on that is low. Here's the China data on GDP rise. Okay, just a few years. This is the latest year from, I think, which is World Bank, 2019 World Bank estimate. USA. I don't know what you do other than show graphs and say, look and think on these kind of things. It is kind of jumping the gun. These are wages, which I won't talk about much in the USA, because you don't know whether we're seeing stability and how much people are going to have. So your children will get the same kind of wage that you're going to get. And they'll have a washing machine and a tumble dryer, but they won't have a new machine. That's kind of implications to this. Is this house prices? You can do lots of house prices. It's my favourite house price index. It's the longest one in the world, based on Wall Street and a canal in Amsterdam. Where, at one point, and it's all squiggly, basically house prices don't rise forever, they don't fall forever. In Amsterdam, in this one street, it did actually fall for 250 years, which is quite spectacular. It was the most expensive street on the planet. And the really fun thing, if you don't own a house in London, you know something he does, is that currently one of the, along with San Francisco, most expensive places on the planet is here. And nobody will believe if you say, I think it's peaking. When I mean it's peaking in London, I mean peaking for 250 years, anyway. But of course, it has to go to eventually. Boris Johnson might help with that. Really spectacular Brexit exit. That's the kind of thing you need. Just to kick off the beginning of the, you know. And then a Corbyn government, which involves the requisition and taxation of empty property. And you watch the billionaires sell up and get out of London fast if they have to pay an annual tithe. Anyway. I'm sure, apart from my friends on the front table, most of you are not property owners in London, so you're not feeling that sorry for people. UK house prices, and again, I think it's sloping down. You know, the 70s were the era of highest real inflation and normal inflation as well. We don't know. Here's the price of gold. I'm probably trying to look at everything. Because people think, because we pay attention when things go up, that's when it's interesting. We don't pay attention much when they go down. My favourite one is far-right voting in Europe. The minute there's a rise in far-right voting, gold drawn in Greece, or the Austrians do something weird, or the Danes, Spain are on it. New York Times do a lovely survey every year of far-right voting across Europe, it's going down. It's just whenever it goes down, we don't report it. When it goes up, we report it. The country with by far the most far-right voting in Europe, I won't do audience interaction on Friday afternoon, there's only one country in Europe where 52% of people in 2014 voted for the political parties to the right of the European Conservatives, and that country is the UK. We are far-right central. We sent 44 MEPs to Brussels, far more than any other country. Who belong to parties to the right of the FDR? Conservatives in 2014 were in a group with Alternative for Deutschland. It's worth knowing this. There were some elections last week. Those elections saw the biggest fall anywhere in the history of the European Parliament in far-right voting in one country, this one. Now, why don't your newspapers tell you that? They don't tell you that, they don't know it. It's not a conspiracy. The number of seats in the new European Parliament, which will be occupied by British MEPs who are to the right of European Conservatives, will drop by 10. And beautifully, in Northern Ireland, they voted out one unionist, voted in one alignment, so Northern Ireland had one, that's 11. And a proportion of voters dropped. You just add Brexit Party plus UKIP plus Tory, they're all the same thing, and then you see a very different message. For budding stockbrokers out there, this is a NASDAQ. If you were sitting in 1996, you might think it can never end. Then we get the dot-com level. You have to smooth all the stock prices over a year to get things to look like this. Two nice little spirals inside each other. We are currently, I think it's about 2 or 3 weeks ago, first of all, no, we're going to just there. Now you can't predict the future with this. You can't, there's absolutely no way. It's fun to look at and go, ah. You know, that does look like it's just about to go nosedive. Conventional graph, people who got sick I know you're listening to graphs, but enormous change. Enormous change. 1 in 10 of the serving keeping classes of London lost at least a child before 5 in this city a century ago. We've utterly changed in the last 5 generations to now. Things can get better. This is nuclear warheads over time. When I was a teenager, we were 3 minutes to midnight, it looked oxide. And again, because we don't concentrate on the good news, the disarmament, it's massive. My PhD supervisor, I want to find a way of giving him more credit for this. I've had a very wacky PhD supervisor called Stan Openshaw. And Stan Openshaw once got hold of 2 documents. One was called the Square Leg Attack, which was the UK government's prediction of which cities would be hit with an attack from Moscow, and the effect of a 1 megaton bomb. Stan stuck 2 reports over each other. He had a GIS, he had a population census from 1981, and he worked out that 30 million people would be dead or die in 2 weeks. And he sat there going, pow, 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 because he didn't care about politics very much. And then what happened was that the US and UK government replicated that kind of work. And then in 1992, they decommissioned all the nuclear bombs secretly, because they realised it was pointless happening. There are lots of very positive stories. It just takes a little bit of time for people to realise that things are really stupid. But there's still enough nuclear weapons for us to all kill ourselves. Big changes over time. This is an example of complete rubbish produced by a social scientist, by the way, which I try not to do very often because it's a bit mean and I haven't told you who's written it. But that particular page about everything speeding up, and you will often read this social scientist write a trade book. Not a single sentence in that is true, but it all sounds plausible. I won't leave it on there if you look too carefully. It's amazing how social scientists would just say things with absolutely no evidence, particularly if it's part of the common conception. And they love artificial intelligence, particularly the ones who can't code up a single line of code. This is marriages going from one state to another in the UK. This is the 2000s and we're almost at the end. I think I'm on 44 minutes. This is the polling rating of the Labour Party. And the reason for putting this up, May 2015, they were down, if you can read, about 33%. Corbyn is elected leader, completely incapable man, can't do a public speech, makes me look good. So it has learned, now he's done over 100 in front of thousands of people. Labour spirals down and down and down towards the start of 2017. That's what the polls look like. Tweedy Mays advises Tedder, nobody has ever not won a massive victory from this position. They eventually convince Tweedy Mays to hold the election, she holds election. And then the polls do this thing. And I used to be able to say, the polls have never, ever in Britain done this before. The biggest ever, fastest swing of public opinion in the weeks going up to the 2017 general election. The Labour get right up there, and she has to form an alliance with the DUP, who do not believe in evolution. And apologies, because I've said that 3 times, and each time I've said it, somebody's come up quietly to me and said, you do know evolution isn't true. So I apologise to the person in the room. Now again, I used to have the same biggest, fastest ever swinging, which is polling, bloody Nigel Farage. Yeah, managed to run into get it. Swing reports in California to remind me we're coming to an end. This is a kind of madness. About the most lethal thing you can have in your garden is a swimming pool. Fairly soulless to have each one to have them separately, particularly in a drought-ridden place like California. But the more stupid ones are near to here, you can just go about 2 miles that way. And I was once in the bottom of a 3-bed semi. It's a 3-bed semi which was on the market for $22 million. Because it was in Mayfair, and they dug down 2 stories and put a swimming pool in the basement, which is just a death trap. I mean, not just your kids, but you come home, you're pissed, you think it's going to be a good idea to go into your own swimming pool anyway. The worry, what I'm trying to get to you in a roundabout way, the worry is whether we're teaching you. That's what we don't know. But we're going to find out. The problem with the are we too stupid thing is, If we are too stupid, we'd be too stupid to work out the thing we're too stupid. You see what I mean? So, anyway, if you want something to worry about. And on being stupid, this is an ultimate slide. This is CO2 levels rising. So, you can worry about many other things, but honestly, if you can just get that down, which requires changing the law in Sweden so that it becomes much more expensive to fly. It requires not building a third runway at Heathrow, no matter how much you might like to fly. The majority of people on EasyJet and Ryanair, so that's ABC1, by the way. Flying is a middle class occupation. You've just got to get CO2 down. It's so obvious. I also thought, if you want some proof as a god, one of the really lovely things is that the relationship between CO2 and temperature rise is perfectly linear. So you don't have to even explain something very complicated to people. But that's going to become clear later. Finally, a very weird graph, but this is Tokyo. And when Tokyo is growing at more individual, more in the suburbs, it's over time. And sometimes Tokyo suburbs are growing, sometimes they have skyscrapers growing in the middle, sometimes. But the thing is, spirals around to the centre because Tokyo stopped changing. And that's the really fascinating thing. Is what is going to happen when things stop changing? And we never think about things stopping changing. But for a very long time, before the last 200 years of expansion, they were very similar, generation after generation. Most people did what their parents or grandparents have done. And we might be heading to a time when it becomes very similar again. In Japan, for over 20 years, they've had less cars than the year before, again and again and again. Population is certainly stabilizing, actually falling in Japan. They've just got to let a few people in, but they wanted to go down to 60 million. And it's not that hard to do. So I'm just trying to give you an idea. All I've done is collect data sets, draw some graphs, and say almost everything is slowing. The things which are not temperature, carbon, number of people who are in the air and more time as passengers in aircraft, and the number of university graduates in the world is still accelerating. So now I'm a PhD student, so your potential competitors, I'm afraid. But the great news is for you is that the cohort just behind you are going to find it even harder to get that job. I don't know, it's a kind of weird kind of satisfaction that. Does something feel better? But actually, it's good news because the number of graduates is still accelerating worldwide, which means you're going to have jobs. But people doing a PhD in 20 years' time, it isn't, because we are heading towards 50% of kids in the world go to university. And it will probably stop about there. It can't obviously get all above 100. And remember, the number of babies is going down and down and down and down. So the number of jobs in universities is going to go down worldwide in 20 years' time. And you're going to be sitting there my age going, if only you worked hard, you'd be okay. And the poor suckers, if you don't plan ahead, will do PhDs in 20 years' time, aren't going to get jobs. And those are the kind of things you can work out now. The reason why we have a panic now about universities in Britain and which want to go into bankrupt is because we had a really low number of babies 18 years ago in this country. So this summer's intake is the lowest ever. And we managed to annoy the MSc students as well, somewhere, at the same year. That's better. But you can, a lot of these things, it's not saying that you know exactly what's going to happen, but you can at least say, most things are slowing down and not accelerating. And I think it's worth trying to do that. Thank you very much for listening.
Lovely, thank you very much, Danny. Does anyone have any questions for Danny?
Can we access those slides online anywhere? We're not the slides, the graphs.
They are, because I did this talk last week at the Mitre School in Oxford, and the great thing about the Mitre School in Oxford is they video the talk, and they video in such high resolution that two people have already sent me data, so you can actually step through and see each one and read all the kind of guesses. So on the graphs, what you couldn't see is text that says, this is This is why I think it's a turnaround at that point. So yeah, just Google me at Oxford High School.
I mean, I had a sort of an observation and question. So the observation was, when you say you've just collected lots of data, I mean, as someone who's worked with data for 20 years, that just collected, I imagine, hides a huge amount of activity, just trying to ferret out all those little data sets, trying to get to the bottom. I suspect you're going to credit colleagues, and I'm sure I'll help you with this.
I've got a colleague helping me now. No, it hides deep nerdiness and tragic personality. Yeah. It does, which is why they go on about it. No. So, but also, you know, so a lot of that. Well, and also, this is just data when the World Bank has put it up. So that has to be credible. The nice thing about this technique is the data has to be really, really good. Otherwise, you see any error, and that's good because if it wasn't the case, there was just too much data in the world to do. But I am a weird, strange individual who, at 1 o'clock in the morning, will be searching out data sets. But some of you are.
Yeah.
You're doing PhDs. Because you're, you know, kind of self-selected weird.
Mm. Yeah, no, the key point there is just being very, very careful about the metadata, about the descriptions of the data. And there have been some great examples recently where people have slightly come to come across on not understanding that the data they're using. So my question was, quite at the beginning, you made a comment about social scientists being really good at trying to ferret out the sort of the negatives from it, and not really focus on the positive things. And to me, that doesn't seem to be a criticism just of social scientists. I think that that's true of a number of disciplines. It's true of the news media. It's not helped by the fact that governments focus on very, very kind of narrow policy windows.
It is.
But I just wondered if you could elaborate a bit on that comment about the fact that we don't recognise the fact that global populations are declining and what that would mean for us as a society.
Well, not recognising it means that we have paranoia about climate migration, you know, and hordes of people, the same old prejudice that we had 100 years ago. The interesting thing about social scientists, I mean, it's quite good that they do target problems, because if you don't target problems, the problems will hang around for longer. The interesting thing is you can go to any country in the world, even the most progressive, socially progressive countries, and you'll find a social scientist moaning about how terrible things are in the country. So you need people to study countries that are not their country. The thing about picking out social science is you get the opposite in medicine and science. To get people to get grants and so on, and to make your vice chancellor like you. You get lots of, we're just about to do this discovery that will have this effect and improve the population's health massively. You get a few medics, quite brave ones, who say, now we've got the human genome, we've worked it out, actually we can't do that much. My friend George Henry Smith wrote a lovely paper called The Gloomy Prospect, and the title gives it away. But you don't get many. And the same in science. You don't get many people who know about AI who say it's pattern recognition and it's not going to get rid of lawyers. And it's really easy to tell you why it won't get rid of lawyers. So currently we have almost half the lawyers in Europe are in this country. There are even more lawyers in America. Lots of countries have very few lawyers because the number of lawyers you have depends on the kind of society you have. And if you have a society that likes litigation and so on, you get more lawyers. It's not that the jobs are necessary and hence will be replaced by AI. But people who work in computer science and AI, you become very unpopular very fast if you don't go along with the... In the case of my university, artificial intelligence is really important, so we're going to build a new college based on it called Parks College. It's not named after you. If you've got a billion, you can have it. But because we're not entirely sure that AI might work, we're going to bung together AI and climate change scientists, because the one sure winner we know, because of rising temperatures, is that in 20 years' time people are going to want to do PhDs about climate change, because it'll still matter. And it annoys me that the AI folk are going to get themselves half a college based on scaring people, because Facebook can recognise faces now.
Any final questions for Danny? Yes.
I was interested in the point you made that reporters maybe don't report the trend that you're showing here because it's not conspiracy, but perhaps they don't know. So it's interesting your experience rather
not very good at it, honestly, that's what I've concluded. So the approach that I've taken, they want news. One thing is that they definitely want news. So if you have a long bunny story, a good one is infant mortality in this country is actually rising. But the first time somebody says that, the fact it's still rising isn't news, even though actually that's much more important than the first rise. The conversation is brilliant. You have to have your PhD before you're allowed to publish in the conversation, but the conversation is, if your university is signed up to it, is really worthwhile. But the other side of this is, and I suppose this is a little bit like looking for bad news, I think it's quite interesting to look for things where you think that the bulk have got it wrong. So one of my preoccupations in the last year has been that the majority of Leave voters live in the south of England, the middle class and so on. And it isn't, and that's not hard to prove. So the interesting question is, why did southern-based journalists not want to think that? And then when they heard it, not want to believe it. And then you've got something interesting to study about journalists. But I am not a model for how to get journalists to believe you, because otherwise a lot of them will be saying a lot of things very differently to what they say.
Okay, on that note, thank you once again, Danny. And that brings us to the final session. I'm waiting eagerly for Daisy to give us the results of the prize award. Thank you very much, Daisy. So, how are we going to do this? Right, Danny is going to present the first and highly commended awards for the poster competition. So the poster, let me make sure I'm going to get this right. I don't want to do a whatever it will happen in America. Go the wrong name. So the poster presentation, first place.
Are you going to do second first?
First. The second place is a draw, the poster presentation, and the two winners are, I'm not quite sure what's in here, so I'm not sure how easy it's going to be for them to share them, are Patricia Bello and Prima Alam. Either or both of you here?
Come.
So if you'd like to come up, you've won second.
It's like lovely.
And then I think we need to take a photo as well.
We're doing it
afterwards.
Okay.
Okay. So,
photos after.
Photos after. So congratulations, goes to Kerry McKay-Smith. First place and highly commended. Highly commended goes to Chris Dyke. Okay, Chris isn't here, so we'll need to give that to him in some other way. Can you organise that, Dave? And then the first prize goes to Rosie Riley. And then finally, we have the tweet of the day, which goes to Jane Mumby. So in that case, We can draw the day to a close. A huge thank you to all the speakers, and in particular to the organising committee, and also a special mention to Linnea Stoffel and to Emma Buckley-Watson, who I understand are really fundamental to making this happen. I think this is the first time this day has happened in this format, and I know the organisers would be really keen to get the feedback on how it's worked, so there are feedback slips on the tables. Do please feed those, do please fill those in. So many thanks, everyone. I hope you had a good day. On behalf of VSSC, I'm delighted you could come. I hope you found it useful. Thank you.